pleasure, and on one hand, it's a momentous day. This is our last Sunday in this building. One hand is joyful, and one hand is cheerful. I kind of did the math on my fingers. I'm not all that good a mathematician. And I came here 26 years ago. I think I mentioned last week, Terry Palmer said, "How long will you stay?" You know, because sometimes preachers are in and out. I said, "I'll guarantee you 10 years. Good memories, tough things. Cricket and Jenny Shires, I look back, get teary, thinking about sharing the gospel with them and with a number of you. How joyous it is. As I mentioned, in leaving this building, of course we got it 75% emptied out. Some things we don't have to take, like pews. Some things, like Ben Putterbaugh said, we might like, if you got a couple in the attic, we might, because we had given them some, we might use two more. Well, if we got some, we can take a look, and if they want them, that's fine. But as we leave here, we'll not miss the maintenance that always needed to be done on this building and never was, and on along that line, or noisy neighbors, or whatever it happens to be, flooding auditoriums. And so it's good to go from that. As we move to a new building, we're not leaving problems and getting paradise. We're changing one set of problems for another set of problems, and that's always what happens. And so there'll just be a new set. But it's good. And if God gives us strength and ability, it really is not for us older ones, because we'll be preparing that for the next generation. That'll be your building. You get to use it to God's glory and the saving of other people's souls. 2 weeks ago, I talked about dreaming the dream and seeing the vision, because sometimes it all gets blurry for individuals. And last week we talked about keeping the dream alive, because sometimes enthusiasm lags or attention gets diverted. This morning I want us to look at another lesson along this line, and it's called Dreaming Great Dreams. I came across this quote. It's really quite well known. Harriet Tubman said, "Every great dream begins with the dreamer." I thought, well, that's good. And then I went and I did a little research on Harriet Tubman. Some of you will know her quite well, others not so well. She was born in 1822 into slavery in Maryland. And she escaped to Philadelphia and then came back repeatedly. Got her family out, got her friends out, got others out, and eventually came back in 13 expeditions to help 70 people get to freedom. And she said, every great dream begins with a dreamer. But her story doesn't end there. Because Harriet worked for the Union Army, first as a cook, then as a nurse, then as an armed scout, and then as a spy. She was the first woman to lead an armed expedition into the war, and she guided the raid at Combahee Ferry, which liberated more than 700 slaves. After the war, she retired at age 37. She gets to 87, but just not yet. But she retired to the family property that she had purchased some years prior in Auburn, New York, where she cared for her aging parents. In her childhood days, she had been hit in the head and had seizures and had medical problems all her life. And then as she gets near the older years, she had a buzzing in her head. She said, "I can't sleep," and asked a doctor to operate on her brain. She reportedly, now you think about this from the standpoint of a courage of a woman. Reportedly, the doctor operated on her without anesthesia as he cut into her skull. And she bit down on a bullet as she had seen Union soldiers do when doctors amputated limbs without anesthesia. I mean, I think this lady is way tougher than I am. My goodness. She was active in women's suffrage movement until illness overtook her, and she had to be admitted in 1911 to a home for elderly African Americans that she helped establish in 1903. She died in 1913, and she became an icon of American courage and freedom. I go, wow! It means a little bit more when we reread her statement of every great dream begins with the dreamer. Somebody that says, I'm willing to step out of my comfort zone, take chances, give the best that I have got to give. Helen Keller said, it's a terrible thing to see and have no vision. Isn't that interesting? Here's this great woman, you know, blind, deaf, and the great things that she could do. When we think about that, it is a terrible thing to see and have no vision. But Joel 2 and down in verse 25, a messianic prophecy said, I will make up to you for the years that the locusts have eaten. Every congregation goes through difficult times. Every congregation hopefully goes through great encouraging times. There's times that we've gone through that's been really hard. We've looked for a building. I've been here 26 years. We did not look for a building the first year. But within the first year, we had elders, deacons, and were self-supporting. Probably the second year, we started looking around for a building. I cannot begin to count how many hours were spent. And most of you know the stories. We would look for property. And person says, no sensitive wetland, and it would be all wetland, and it would be 1 inch of dry ground. We'd buy a piece of property, be beautiful, and fight the county 10 years. They said, it's sensitive wetland. We demonstrate it isn't. Jerry has to go to them and talk to them, Jerry Honeysett, and they said, well, yeah, we agree. We're looking at the wrong piece of property. I'm suspicious that the reason they fought us is they made an honest mistake. So we said, all right, we're ready to build. No, you can't build because we've changed the codes. All right, we'll sue. You can't sue. You waited too long. And all the other piece of property, the real estate property that we'll look at, we'll try to modify. You remember that piece of property, most of you down in Fife, would take that horrendous amount of rehabbing and do it. And then if had we done that, the traffic has increased 400% in the last year right there. If you ever went to church, you could never leave, or vice versa. And we looked at, wow, and we're getting ready to do it, and the owner said, well, I've rented it to somebody else. There was a piece of property, lovely little church building on 320th. In the early years, we're ready to buy, they're ready to sell. And they said, we just got one question for you. Here's a denominational group that said, I said, we got the money. We got more money than the other people got to give you. We're ready right now. They said, okay, good. We have one question for you. If we sell it to you, will you consider joining our denomination? And I go, oh. I cannot tell you how many times I thought about that. What I really told them is, to be candid, that's not going to happen. I can't tell you how many times had I thought about saying, we'll talk about it. Well, but I know we can talk from now to the time cows come home. There's not one person that would do that, including me. But I wanted to be very candid right on target, and they gave it to the Koreans, somebody, I don't know who. I drive by that all the time. Every fourth time I think, you know, that could have been our building. The problem is, it was very nice, very dinky little building, and you could get in there this amount of people, but forget about having classrooms or anything else. And I look at that. How many times did we look forward and say, almost there, and it evaporated? You get discouraged after 25 years. Abraham waited for a son that long. Abraham began to think, well, maybe I'll work it some other way. It was within God's timing. Joel 2:28 says, your old men will dream dreams and your young men will see visions. Of course, that's Bible language for God-giving revelation. And so we want to take His word, work within His word, to have the kind of goals that we ought to have. But candidly, sometimes we feel like, I don't think it's going to work. We've done all this and it still doesn't. God says, you're almost ready to have that, but not quite. Please be patient. Think about things in the line of dreaming great dreams. Alexander the Great had the dream, and I'm using that accommodatively from the standpoint of a goal, a vision along that line, of Hellenizing, making the known world, Greek customs, Greek language, and all such as that. So here is, dad was from Macedon, and he conquered everything across Asia Minor, down into Egypt, Mideast, what's now Iran, Iraq, all the way over to the Indus River in India. And because he had that dream, think about this. The New Testament is written in Greek because that's a trade language. Everybody was talking it. That's how you communicated. Alexander had a vision, and of course the overlay just kind of shows, here's, you know, the size of the United States, and at least east to west, although not breadth, Alexander's kingdom was greater than our country, although ours is deeper. If you think about another area along this line, here's another dreamer. Martin Luther King had a dream of racial equality. And that was the launching pad for the civil rights movement in this country. He said, I have a dream that one day my four little children will live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. That was the original statement of it in 1963. Of course, he reused that phrase and broadened it for all of us. But that's true of us. We want to be judged for who we are, not what we look like. Think about dreaming great dreams. Here was the Apostle Paul as he crossed the Aegean Sea on the second missionary journey. He says, Romans 15:20, it's always been my ambition to preach where the gospel has not been known. New International Reading. Jesus said in Mark 16:15, the Great Commission, go into all the world. And that's what Paul was doing. And then in Acts 21 and down in verse 13, you know, they keep telling him, boy, don't go to Jerusalem, boy, bonds await you there. And he said, I'm ready not only to be bound, but even to die at Jerusalem. When we think about the degree of commitment we have to Jesus Christ, do we have that kind of enthusiasm? Whatever it takes, whatever energy I've got, God, you've got every last ounce of it. I mean, that's thrilling. It's chilling when you see that among Christians. Because I'm committed. How far? 100%. I just thought about that. Drew is our local resident ranger. And what about the guys on his crew? If they said, man, Drew, I'm with you. 37% of the time. The rest of the time, hey, man, we're out of here. He said, oh, hey, good for you. But if you're out of here, get out of here now. Because when the going gets tough, that's when we really need you. When we think about serving God, not a full 37%. If we got 97, could it be more? Could it be 100%? So I thought about what's going to be in the next 10 years for you and I. What will be for this congregation? What will be for this nation? Here's just a handful of secular predictions made by ScienceWatch.com and predictions for 2025, 10 years from now. Whether it's true or not, I'm not giving you a money-back guarantee. This is just what they said. Dementia incidence has been on the rise. It declines in 2025. Solar energy will be the largest used source of energy on the planet. Diabetes and muscular dystrophy will be preventable by gene engineering. Food shortage eliminated by genetic modification. I mean, I can't see how that would be in 10 years. Maybe not. What in 50? Wireless everything. You know, we're kind of there now. I was just thinking, I think it was early this morning. I woke up really early. And I just got to think about my phone. I remember when they first came out, Jim Myers is the first guy that told me about a smartphone. I said, what's that? He said, well, you got a computer on it. And I remember back then, I thought, why do I want a computer on my phone? Oh, well, it has a few little advantages. I can talk on the phone if Cricket has one. We got FaceTime. We can see each other. Bill Downey, who's working this morning, be down there in Oregon. He clicks on, hi, this is me and Steve Finley, Paul, and we're saying hello to you. You can talk to people across the nation, out of internationally, and it sounds like they are in the same room with you. I can go on my bank, do my banking on there, email letters, do my schedule, take photos, listen to music. I mean, it's the whole little Hummer in your phone. I said, Paul, would you like to go back to smartphone? No. Excuse me, dumb phone and lose your smartphone. No, I don't want to lose my smartphone. It does a whole lot of really cool things. And one of the things it does is keeps me on track because I can put in my schedule and it beeps when, Paul, pay attention. You should be driving from here to here rather than getting over-focused on what you do. So smartphones are challenging, expensive, and really helpful. But in addition to that, it's wireless everything. In fact, one of the things we used to see here is Bill Gates does stuff in his home, makes his blinds go up and down. With the new church building, we had a little challenge yesterday as we're trying to move in. The people that weren't supposed to be there were there. When we tell them, all right, if you're going to be there, you can be upstairs, but not downstairs. By the time we get there, they're already downstairs. I told them explicitly they're not to do that. We could have called the police and kicked them out, but that would seem, you know, a little awkward. Police report, Christians kick out religious group from their building. And so I thought, not a problem. I was a little agitated. I didn't say anything, you know, caustic or such as that. But I found myself this morning still thinking over those principles. And I talked with Rocky. And the first part of this week, we're getting the locks changed on the outside. We're going to solve that problem. But one of the things is I talked to Tom Burrell, who's our local security that. He said, oh, man, we can put all that stuff in. And I find out you can arm and disarm the security system at the building from your phone. I said, oh, how cool is that? Packaging will tend to be non-petroleum, no plastics and all these kind of things. But a nanomaterial of cellulose-based plant, totally biodegradable. Cancer treatment targeted and few toxic side effects. DNA mapped at birth and monitored throughout life, looking for changes. So I said, aha, I see what you got going along in your... Now there's upsides and downsides. The upside is, this is changing for you and it shouldn't be, and we could address it easily. Planes of nanomaterial with thin film batteries. Just get in there, ultralight, fly. You don't need petroleum. It'll be out there a ways, but they've already started doing it. This is one of the things I thought was really cool. Accelerated research testing teleportation of material. You know, the Star Trek, so it'll beam me up and... They're already dealing with the principle. In a 2012 report, it cites, now I can say the words and say, Paul, do you understand that? No, Ben Cotenbaum family are vacationing. But the report cites the disappearance of electron antineutrino particles 400 times. Matter's not created or destroyed. You got the super colliders, and we're noticing really cool things. And what they're thinking is, we're going to accelerate our research that can we move this stuff? We're not beaming people to spaceships, but can you move anything on a particular basis? And reassemble. You go, wow, that's Star Wars stuff. They're really in the research to deal with it. You go, wow, those are dreams that people have in the scientific community. Fair enough. Well, what's your vision? What's your vision for life 10 years from now? Is it substantially better? Spiritually, I'm going to grow. I want to be spiritually vibrant. Because the problem is, if you don't think and plan, 10 years from now, you can be at the same spot or worse. So what you plan is, what do I want to be for Christ? Do I want to grow? And am I prepared to take those steps to dreaming great dreams? Every great Bible character sought higher ground. We talk about it, if a tsunami comes, go to high ground, right? What if we just do that as Christians? Here's wherever I am. Here's the next step and the step after that. Think of Abraham in Hebrews chapter 11 and in verse 10, where Abraham was looking for a city who has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Said, I want more than goats and tents. I'm looking for God's city. Of Moses, said Hebrews 11:25, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God. Verse 26, for he was looking to the reward. There's going to be more than just being head of Egypt. God, I've got a plan. It is a great plan. Moses would get sidetracked. Abraham didn't do it all right. And then of Jesus, he said for the Hebrews 12:2, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And so sometimes we get discouraged. We lose our dream. Lose confidence. We keep stumbling forward, but not with momentum. Every great Bible character sought higher ground. And there's a formula for making dreams come true. Just the introductory part I'll mention here. In you've got your Bibles, Philippians chapter 3 and down in verse 8. Here's where the Apostle Paul makes this comment about his life and the attitudes that he had. He said, I count all things to be loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Jesus Christ, my Lord. When he says knowing, it doesn't mean just I know about him, but I know him. I strive to be like him. I know his character, I know his personality, I know his power, and I want what God has for me. There's my vision. That's what I want to do. And then there's the cost of that in Philippians chapter 3 and down in verse 8. In the second half where he says, for whom I've suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish. Yeah, but you were advancing far above your countrymen. He said, that doesn't matter to me. But you had a reputation for generations. He said, that's not helping me in my Christianity. Yeah, but look how powerful you have in the kind of the religious political realm. You can go to the high priest, get letters, go to Damascus. He said, rubbish. It doesn't matter. What matters is Jesus Christ. So as we talk about the formula, in Philippians 3:13, he shows the singleness of purpose. Because that's where he says that, brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do. He said, I have got a focus. And we do that sometimes in our rat race kind of society. We get distracted. But if we're fired up, and Christ is really our dominant focus. That's our function. And everything else has a place somewhere below that. Then we're getting to see what Apostle Paul says. One thing I do. I have got a focus. And he says, what I do is forgetting what lies behind. And that bothers us sometimes because we think about our past. And boy, I wish I hadn't done these things. And I didn't do very good here. And I really messed up over there. And those of you that weren't in on the move, as we load up here and we're going over to the Tacoma building, the Seventh-day Adventist had with the previous owners an agreement where they could use the building. And so we're coming in, and I told the Seventh-day Adventists that called me. I said, we're in downstairs. They said, yeah, but we're going to do a potluck, and we're going to do this or that. I said, you're not doing it there. Yeah, but we've spent money and blah, blah, and we don't have enough time to blah, blah, blah. I said, I understand you, and the answer is no. We're en route on I-5. I get a call from Larry. He said, they're already there and setting up. I say this with a dash of humor. You know my continual mellow and non-ruffled personality? Man, I am hot. I mean, I don't yell or anything, but shoot, I am hot. And they're a Samoan group, and I said, I'll just tell you what I said. I said, Omar, come with me. I thought, Paul, you're not even saying it right. Omar, would you please come? Because you're married to a Samoan. It's going to help me be calmer when you are with me. Because I thought, I want to say things right. And he talks Samoan. I don't know how much, but he's in there. And so we just walk up. First people say, we want to talk to your pastor. I'm sorry, he's in worship. We want it, and so they send down a secretary. But really, just having Omar there was calming to me. Their secretary comes in, and Omar says afterward, he said, I don't know how Paul was going to handle himself. Did I do okay? Yeah. Did I say anything mean?
No, but I said he was heated.
I was heated. I just, Probably because my ears were turning red and steam was coming out. But I didn't have to say anything bad. There's things I don't understand why they would do that. But that's for another time. But I want to say, Lord, I want you to control me. I hear of church, they get in the news sometimes, a fight breaks out in the church building in the park, and we're not going to do that kind of thing. Lord, you are our Lord. This is a little inconvenience. It just doubled our effort. But we can work around that. But that's not going to happen again. Forgetting what lies behind, verse 13, and this aspect of looking forward to what lies ahead. I need to make continual progress. I need to reach toward. I need to press on toward that goal. It doesn't work in anything. Well, I went to school 2 days and I think I'm done, or I was conscientious on the job for 2 hours. The rest of the time I'm a goof off. Or I started in Christianity and I just got discouraged and quit. That's really what it takes. I've got a single purpose. I'm not going to fret about the past. I am going to look toward the future and press on toward the goal of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. You think about a garden, and I just looked at several, and I thought, I like this one. I like beautiful gardens. I like immaculate ones. I just don't like to do the work to get it there. But the reality is everything has got to be tended. Flocks have got to be tended, right? You can't say, well, we had all these sheep out there, but I don't know what happened to them. And went a lot of time. Oh, last year I went down. Oh, the wolves got them. They strayed, got stolen, sick, died, everything else. Kids. If somebody said, yeah, we got kids. How many got? Oh, I lose track. I mean, several. I've got a four-year-old son. Yeah, anybody seen a six-year-old? Nobody does that. They need, your pets need tending. And this week, Ben and Joy are out of town. Travis is house sitting for them and watching over their pets. And one of them is this wobbly, old, lovable black lab. And Joy's going out of town and said, Dad, now look, if Travis has a problem and the dog starts to go, when you take him to the vet, put him down. I said, Travis or Oreo? The reality is, everything needs tending. Your careers, your marriage, your spirituality, the building that we're in, and the building that we're going to. It's bigger. But just shutting the windows and doors on that is intimidating. I mean, dozens of windows and half a dozen doors, and you got to go out only the back door by the office, and rearm the thing, or the thing goes off, and then the police come with guns drawn, and they take Rocky away, and we don't want to lose them. But our bodies are the same way. Everything takes tending. And we can either choose to be a lot of vacant weeds, or a beautiful, productive, cultivated garden. We're the same way. What's the difference? One takes effort, and the other shows neglect in everything in life. This building had problems, irritated us to death. That building will have problems. It's just the home ownership does, living in an apartment does. That's just a fact of life. I was talking to Brent Hunter up in Kirkland a few weeks ago, and he was telling me about some of the problems they had. They had a water pipe break somewhere, and this was several years ago. And it was, or maybe storm damage, something, $150,000 of damage. They had a water pipe break. He goes in something Saturday, I'll say, morning or whatever. And lovely building up in Kirkland, and there's ankle-deep water. But here, you get wet carpets. He's sloshing through. That was only $15,000 worth of damage. But it happens. Dreaming great dreams will take some execution. It'll have the dream, have that single focus that we ought to have. It is going to mean forgetting what lies behind. Well, I wish I was back. You know, some people will probably get to the building, oh man, wasn't it easier when we're back in West Campus, when we didn't have to worry about all that many doors to shut and how many windows. Oh, by the way, we got this little tiny area to sweep. People don't much like doing it. If you say, Paul, do you like it? No, I don't like it. I'll do it, but I don't like it. This is 11,000 square feet of building. But a lot of it is tile, so it's easier. But there's a lot of work. So don't say, you know, we should have been back at West Campus, because we're here in this concrete box, you know. And the thing I quote on Mickey repeatedly, he said, one good thing about being here, you can't fall out of the windows. Well, that's true. But that's about it. But that doesn't mean where we're going will be, woo, there'll be challenges, but we're up to the challenges. Dreaming great dreams will require effort. And there's some things involved in the process of building those dreams. Here's just kind of a schematic of Solomon's temple. And here is the temple proper with the court of the women and the court of men and court of Israel and priests and so forth. And then the temple proper right there. And sometimes we talk about, you know, Jesus the apostle being in Solomon's porch, and here's the royal porch, and This is on a hill, and so everything is down from that. And we sat on the steps. Some of those steps still remain, and there's a western wailing wall. All those interesting things. Well, when it came time for Solomon to build, he tells Hiram up to the north, he said, my father David wanted to, but I intend to build the temple as the Lord had commanded. So, 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 5, that was his goal, his intention. And then he gathered the resources in 1 Kings chapter 5 and verse 6. He tells Hiram, send workers into the hills and bring forth cedar, beautiful cedar logs. Here's a northern country. Well, there's a lot to that. Young man, I worked in a lot of the trades, foundries and structural steel. And one of the things I did was log. So I know what's involved in falling trees and yarding them up, in our case, to the landing site, and then loading them onto, in our case, a truck. In their case, what they did is get it down to the sea and floated it down. But all of that has, and then in my case, driving to the mill and offloading, all of that has danger. Falling the tree, yarding the tree, loading and unloading and building. And he said, but there's no one like the Syrians that do that. That's a beautiful timbered area back in biblical time. So whatever it is, that what your goal is, all right, here's what I want to do. Now here's what I need to do to get ready to do that. And then he organizes the people in 1 Kings chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. I'll not go through all that, but 70,000 to do this and 7,000 that, and and we had to do that among ourselves just for the move. There's so much to do, and the loading, and some other people getting the truck, and somebody else knowing where to put the stuff. And we had a number, we just called it the muscle crew. They're the people that said, all right, we're here to get the job done. And then the facility was designed. You can look at all of 1 Kings chapter 6, minute detail, how many cubits in each size, and you got the cherubim and the altars and the doorways and all of those things. Well, that takes that organizational build, whether you're getting married, going to college, getting your house ready, if you're having children, enormous complexity. And I have noted that just in us getting moved from here to Tacoma, and how you get each thing ready, label everything, where it goes on the truck, which goes first, how do you get it off the truck. Oh, look at there. We're not going to be able to put it where we want to put it because we got somebody else in our church building at the moment. So we're, okay, everything will get tucked in these other areas. But it'll be all right. We've got some of us during the week will be able to get some of that chaos figured out. And next week, the move from here will just should be easy squeezy. And then he set the time. And that is 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 2. He said, on the second day of the second month, in the fourth year of his reign. He didn't wait till he was 182 years to get the job done. And we need to think about that for ourselves. Along this line, that all serious dreamers have a timetable. It can't be sooner or later, one day, before long, and when I get around to it. It doesn't happen. What happens is you set the time. At noon today, we're going to be done. Yeah, we're going to be done, I mean, my part, before noon today. And the reality is, everything you're going to do, do you have a date stamp on it? You say, well, I'm not quite sure how to achieve that. Well, Proverbs 15:22, without consultation, plans are frustrated. With many counselors, they succeed. I don't know how many phone calls I've had with Jerry Honeysett. I don't know how many times he's bought me breakfast. I said, Jerry, what about this? And he moves through those financial things, you know, with breeze. Jerry, what about this and that and this and that? And he just talks their language. He hammered out the financial profile, the whole thing, knew the person, made it happen. Come to find out, the sellers of the building, there were three elders representing the seller side, and one of them, guy was a banker. And we happened to mention, yeah, we're getting our, we got large down payment, but the part of the building we're paying off by loan is with Columbia. He said, with Columbia? One of the elders said, I work for Columbia. Well, yeah, well, the guy we're working with at Columbia is Calvin Pearson. He said, you know Calvin? I know Calvin. I train Calvin. So here's bankers can talk. He started talking to banker stuff. I had a clue what he was teaching Calvin, but I don't care. But what he said of Calvin, he said, you got one good guy right there. We had a problem with the title company, didn't get the right document, the right amounts to us. The banker on the seller side said to us, if he'd have had Calvin here, he'd have taken care of that. We got it all hammered out. You just have a few more hurdles to cross. But I tell Jerry how thankful we are of you and you and Sally. Thank you for being with us. Walking us through, from my standpoint, you know, the fire swamp and maze of rodents of unimaginable size, and I don't know how to handle these things. He said, oh, that's not a problem. You just burp, 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 and we walk right through. In Proverbs 16 and down in verse 3, he said, commit your works to the Lord, and your plans will be established. My attitude all the way along was, Lord, it's going to be up to you. Because there's 10,000 things that could go wrong. We say, here much, how much time we want for discovery. They say, oh, no, we only want this much. You got to. It all worked out. But my attitude is, Lord, whatever you want. And almost to the day before we actually signed, I said, Lord, it could all go up in flames. My attitude is, it's going to be what it's going to be. I can't make things happen. Lord, you are the creator of all of the universe. Whatever you want is going to have to be the way it is. I want you to think about this. The young will say, well, I got plenty of time, so why start now? The older say, why bother? It's too late now. The fearful say, what if I fail? I'll feel worse. If you don't even try, you're guaranteed to fail. What is there that we want to accomplish for God? I jotted down some notes this morning that I wanted to share along this line. Choosing greatness and succeeding is always exhilarating and rewarding, but it's never comfortable. It's challenging, it's difficult, it's getting out of our comfort zone. The common denominator among successful people is they're willing to do the things the unsuccessful people are not willing to do. As we think about those kind of things, that why do the less successful people end up there? Because they choose the path of least resistance. When I first started preaching in Sumner, 44, 45 years ago, something like that. There was a guy there that I didn't baptize, but he's a little younger than I, but he just went off into craziness. That had been his background, he stayed faithful just for a little while, and then back into drugs and alcohol and crime and all this. And finally, one of his family members, years passed, and said, he's up at Everett, would you go see him? And his name was Eimer, unusual. And I said, sure, I'll go see him. And he looked older then than I do now. Gray and withered and drawn. Sometimes you look in a hospital room and you don't recognize the person. And sometimes the reason is because that's not the right person. Hi, are you Henry? No, I'm not Henry. Excuse me. And when he spoke, I thought, it's the right voice. I went, wow, that's him. He would be into drugs so heavily. In between that time, he'd be down in California and craziness and come up here. If you know the Sumner area, there's a little pizza place called Aversano's. Want to meet me there? I'd meet him. And I'm saying all this so you'll appreciate the end thing that he says. So we're chatting a little bit, and I have no idea why he wants to talk to me. And he said, Paul, I've got a question for you. I said, okay. Now, he's serious with this. He says, I'll just look at Richard. He says, do you think I'll Melchizedek? I go, no. Why do you ask? He said, just wondering. Why would he come up with that? He was so drug fog. He thought the FBI was watching him from his own television, and the CIA has a camera on the pole, you know, particularly watching him. So all this craziness. So here now, and this is, 30 years ago. I go to the hospital and I see him and I say, Eimer, why did you do all those crazy things you did? And what he says at that point, he said, he gave me almost nothing. He said, well, just decisions I made. Well, that didn't help me. I knew that already. But then he gave me the epilogue. And what he said was, I always chose the easy way. I said, wow, that's it. And then he added a little conclusion to that. He said, I think I dressed, and his word was, kind of unseemly. He dressed like a druggie. And I tell people, I've had people, street people, talk to me about drugs. But they were so foggy, I couldn't tell if they were asking to buy some from me or that to sell me some. I couldn't figure that out. But generally, people don't come up and say, hey, man, do you want a little? Why? I don't dress that way. I could sit in a bus stop, you know, they look at me and, hey, here's that weird guy with a sport coat and a tie, but they're not trying to sell me some crack or meth or something else. I dress differently. I tend to act differently. And when we have choose the path of least resistance, we're acting like everybody else does. When you finally say, look, I'm done with that. I'm going to go in the right direction. People that are heaven-bound are willing to take on those challenges even if they're uncomfortable. You say, but I don't get very far. Michelangelo took on the challenge of painting the Sistine Chapel that is 400 years later people are still in awe about. It took him 4 years laying on his back. And he would paint a couple inches a day. But he had the plan. He said, here's where it's going to go. If we feel like, man, I don't have all that much energy, but I only make a little progress. If you make a couple inches a day. Martin Luther King said, if you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. If you can't crawl, do something to make some progress. If we see that in ourselves, that I'm not giving up. I am not stopping. And the last thing I want to share with you is a conversation that I had, actually Travis and I had. We went in the hospital on Friday to be with Cindy Clark, Jeff Clark's wife, preacher from Sumner who had second cancer surgery. And so we're kind of in a little semicircle, and I hardly got to talk to Cindy. We'll hug, and hey, how you doing? Love you. But who I got to talk to most was Cindy's sister, Sandy. Very tall. I mean, she's six. How tall? She's taller than you, isn't she, Travis? Yeah. How tall are you?
I'm
Yeah, she's at least 6'2".
Very, very athletic. Next week's sermon, Lord willing, in Tacoma, is going to be on Thanksgiving, not the celebration of, but the attitude of. And I want to share with you some awesome things she said. Absolutely dynamite.
I'm going to give you just one excerpt that seems to apply more so here this morning. So I said, have you seen the church building? So I'm on my phone, I showed her, she said, wow!
I said, from my standpoint here, it's been 26 years. And here's what Sandy said. God's timing is different from ours. We waited 26 years. It seemed impossible. But 26 years was exactly right. She said 26 years was God's time. It was good. And it increased our faith.
I go, wow. Wow. I said, Sandy, let me write this down.
But that's right. God's time isn't always our time. God had to say, I know you're anxious and you tried 500 different things. It didn't work. But I've got this other place that's just right for you. They are going to be so ready to sell it for you. When they're, Jerry's going to say, I'm going to offer you less than you're asking. They're going to say, okay. And that's exactly how it was. It's in God's time. If you're here this morning, you say, I'd like to become a Christian. I want to be baptized. We'll find a place to baptize you. And if you're with us next week, we're going to have a place because the building has a baptistry. But you may be ready, and this is God's time. If it's your time, won't you let us know by coming forward as we stand and sing this invitation song.